Hello and welcome, avid listeners, to the first episode of season 2 of the Book Boys podcast.
So now, we're episode 21.
Episode 21. Don't get confused. Still episode 21, but technically season 2.
Yeah, where some changes are happening on this
mostly podcast. On the Instagram page.
The Instagram page is changing up. And the whole imagery.
Actually, we're getting a little more serious.
Yeah, I think so too.
The structure of this particular podcast is going to be different than before. We're trying something new. We'll see if you like it.
And try to be a little more consistent, you know. We're attempting a lot of new things going on.
We're gonna do a weekly episode. That's the goal. And that's, I think, really we can do goal. It.
Yeah.
And next episode is gonna be Paul Auster novel.
Yeah.
So get excited for that.
Because Max has read it. I am currently reading it, having a great time. Let me tell the viewers. I don't want to spoil it for you guys, but you're in for a treat.
It's a real good book. I read it in maybe a week.
I think I can do that.
It's really just one of those books where you just...
It's a great time.
I was thinking about it, I was like...
It's very relaxing, you know? It's like, relaxing, end of the day, read a little book.
But it's a classic Paul Auster. I mean, you're not that far into it yet, but you'll see...
I'm guessing it's going to get a little crazy. Paul Auster always...
As per usual, yeah.
So today...
Today we're tackling Edgar Allan Poe.
I think we've done a short story before. I think we've done
one... No, that was the one where we did like 3 or 4...
Oh yeah, the one was like
all the different colored rooms.
The Venice something. It was like the Venice Prince or something like that.
Perhaps.
But quite wonderful stories, which we really enjoyed. It's quite an old style of writing, I believe.
Certainly, yeah.
It's quite hard to read, to be honest, because some of the words I had to search up, I didn't understand.
I feel like there was some French in there.
The first.
Here at the story is called The Man in the Crowd, and it's I found it in this. Penguin Classics book, The Fall of the House of Usher and Other Writings, and this is just a short story.
It's a collection of short stories.
But if you could tell us what, maybe read out that very top quote.
The very top, so this is the first quote of the short story, and it starts with "Ce grand malheur de ne pouvoir être seul," which means this big misfortune of not being able to be alone.
This big misfortune of not being able to be alone.
It's by, I would like to say this lad, called Jean de la Bruyère.
Yeah.
He was a very famous French, he's still a very famous French philosopher.
Okay.
Not that many facts about him.
Are you familiar with him?
I'd heard his name before. Okay. I've never actually read of any of his, because it's quite old French, but I've heard of him before. And remember how we were talking about composed names? So like... Something, something, von, something?
Yes.
Or like...
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and so in this case, so he is de la Bruyère, so it's composed, and that's usually a sign of the higher class, basically.
Right.
And he, to show his discontent at this, he decided to write his name as de la Bruyère, all attached.
Oh,
which was pretty cool. Wow. He's like, I don't care about this, you know.
Wow, that's very interesting.
So, fun fact about this guy.
Indeed.
Because I searched him up.
The way we're going to be doing this podcast is I'll read short passages throughout the story, and then we'll kind of go from there. But before, it's been a little unstructured, and we've just kind of been deliberating about the plot.
Yeah.
But I think this way we'll be...
This could be a little more... We'll try it out and we'll see how it goes.
Less just talking about irrelevant things.
Yeah, and less time, I guess, trying to remember what parts correspond with which...
Exactly.
Which line?
Yeah, this will hopefully provide some more structure. Please do pardon me. There's some. I believe it's German. Yeah, there's some German.
Yeah, there's some German parts. Which I.
And there's just some things in here which I won't be pronouncing properly. So bear with me. But here we go.
First act try.
It was well said. This is the very beginning of the story. It was well said of a certain German book, that, es lasst sich nicht lesen. It does not permit itself to be read. There are some secrets which do not permit themselves to be told. Men die nightly in their beds, wringing the hands of ghostly confessors and looking them piteously in the eyes, die with despair of heart and convulsion of throat on account of the hideousness of mysteries which will not suffer themselves to be revealed. Now and then, alas, the conscience of man takes up a burthen so heavy in horror that it can be thrown down only into the grave, and thus the essence of all crime is undivulged.
So immediately he throws us into this sort of, I'd like to say, this bath of information
Yeah.
that he's giving us immediately.
This is really kind of...
It's very dark.
It's a nice, like, precursor, prefix to the story, which I guess only towards the end becomes relevant.
Where you're like... Well, throughout the story, I feel like there's a general theme of quite...
Generalizes?
Yes, thank you very much. He does that with, I guess, the human race as a whole. He says, you know, there are crowds.
He categorizes them. He puts
people into groups. And in this situation, he's already, like... saying that everyone dies in convulsions and that it's quite a rough life.
Yeah, certainly.
And which is reflected in the city of London here, that he's going to talk more about.
Yeah, so this our narrator, an unnamed, there's no real characters,
it's just very, very vague. From what we've but
before.
Yeah, it's, but the narrator is sitting in some sort of cafe.
In London, and he's observing the crowd that passes him, and he talks about women coming back from work, he talks about gamblers, he talks about noblemen.
Very different classes. Yeah. And I thought this was quite an interesting short story, because it kind of reflects what we have done. A couple of days ago, we worked at the library for the whole day, and for lunch break, we stopped and we went to a fast food restaurant, and we were observing the people on the street, and we were like nice pointing parallel. People out. Yeah. And I thought that was a good reflection.
The common term for it is people watching, which is what
he's doing. When you say it like that, it sounds kind of creepy, huh?
Yeah, but
people watching on the street?
I've heard many people talk about it.
Well, I guess it's a very common thing.
It's very interesting to observe your fellow man.
Oh, yeah. Especially from a sort of high vantage point where you know they can't see you. You're like,
exactly.
What is that guy doing over there?
Yeah.
And he really pushes this in depth by analyzing like where they're from, what he imagines their life to be like.
Yeah.
Which is quite an interesting aspect to take.
Yeah. So then we move on. As the night deepened, so deepened to me the interest of the scene. For not only did the general character of the crowd materially alter, its gentler features, retiring in the gradual withdrawal of the more orderly portion of the people, and its harsher ones coming out in bolder relief, as the late hour brought forth every species of infamy from its den. But the rays of the gas lamps, feeble at first in their struggle with the dying day, had now at length gained ascendancy, and threw over everything a fitful and garish lustre. All was dark, yet splendid, as that ebony to which has been likened the style of Tertullian.
So here we find out that this is a nighttime situation.
Indeed, yes.
I really like the description of the lamps, which dim. Well, at first you can't really see them because it's still daytime, and then they really take
the imagery take over. In this whole story, because we're going through a 24-hour period in the story.
I guess so. Well, mostly during the night, but
yeah,
I guess it's like end of the day kind of situation, and it lasts a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a story going on, but I think we also must appreciate the imagery in this. It's like the way that he describes
it's fascinating, because immediately I picture in my mind.
Exactly.
It's London, it's nighttime.
He pulls you in there.
Yeah, and he says infamy comes out, so you immediately, it's a different class of people that are walking the streets now.
And especially it's so interesting that an author is able to kind of transport the reader back in time, which is happening here.
Yeah, it transcends time in a way, because we immediately picture it ourselves.
Yeah.
In this context, and since the narrator hasn't been named, you can picture yourself even easier in his shoes.
Yeah, exactly. And what it's not so much that what Paul Auster, I feel, kind of does is where you become the character, or like with what we talked about with Murakami, that you feel so identified.
He creates a kind of a character that's easy to relate to.
But now you're almost like you're the third person.
Yeah,
I don't think you're the. I don't feel like I'm the person.
The person.
This,
I
I'm
guess so.
Observing.
You're more observing a person. Yeah, he's giving you his view on it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I guess so. It's a little more. It takes over a little more.
Mm-hmm. And then I this passage, I don't know why I. Oh, yes, I just thought this was so nicely written. And although the rapidity with which the world of light flitted before the window prevented me from casting more than a glance upon each visage, still it seemed that, in my then peculiar mental state, I could frequently read, even in that brief interval of a glance, the history of long years.
Yeah, I remember that. That also struck a chord with me.
Yeah.
It's just very well written.
Yeah, exactly.
At this point, it's like you have to appreciate such good writing.
This like romantic idea, and this, the way that he's just looking at people, and then he's
He's imagining.
He's making all of these assumptions about them, but he's also just admitting that there. You can see, you know, there's so much history to everyone that's around him.
It's quite. He feels kind of submerged by that, I guess. It's so much.
And it's almost kind of belittling to look at it.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think even for him, who's writing it, he's like, there's so much that I don't know and that I'm assuming about these people.
Yeah,
but just from the crowd.
What he is doing is though he kind of really takes himself out of. Out of everyone, you know, he's not part of it.
Oh, yeah,
he's an outside observer.
It's kind of like a God figure, you know, looking down on these people and...
And judging. He's judging them.
I guess so. And it's, you know, it's... In a way, it's quite... Yeah, as you said, it's belittling for the other people who are walking around. It kind of... You kind of lose your sense of individuality, you know. It's like everyone's down there.
Yeah.
And you can just assume stuff from up here.
But then his focus shifts to one particular man at this point.
Which it really helped me keep going with this.
Yeah.
Because I was like, where is he going with this? You know, he's just describing people, and then he hits the one guy.
For just the right amount of time here, because I was also thinking, is there going to be enough for us to discuss here? But for the right amount of time, he kind of talks in general terms, and then at this point in the story, he goes specifically...
And the narrator really comes into a realization when he sees this man.
Yeah.
I feel he changes his view on the subject.
On with the book. Then came a craving desire to keep the man in view, to know more of him. Hurriedly putting on an overcoat and seizing my hat and cane, I made my way into the street and pushed through the crowd in the direction which I had seen him take, for he had already disappeared. With some little difficulty, I at length came within the sight of him, approached and followed him closely, yet cautiously, so as not to attract his attention.
So here we see, well, the story changes completely. Mm-hmm. Now the I guess the narrator has come down from his high vantage point.
Yeah.
And he's joined the crowd, basically. He's part of the crowd now.
But what is it about this man?
That's the interesting part. We don't really know, except the fact that I think he comes out of the cafe in which he was. I think that's the...
But isn't he sitting in the cafe and then people are walking by?
Yeah, but I guess he walks past under him, so he sees him very... And yeah. I don't know, apparently it's gained his attention. Apparently it's from... I can't remember what it was, but something struck his eyes. And in a way, the individuality reappears here, because he was making a bunch of assumptions about everyone. And then this one guy, he couldn't place him in one of these
boxes. I think that's perhaps it, yeah.
So he's like... Interesting man. How come he's so different? And so that's why
he wants to be able to classify everybody.
Yeah.
You can't let someone just slip away without him knowing more about them.
I guess so. And what makes them different from the others?
Yeah, but the mistake there lies, I think, in that he's making all of these assumptions, but he's not, you know, none of them are actually have any substance to them.
Oh yeah, it's just purely from what he can see.
But he takes from his vantage point the things that he thinks.
I guess so. So it's a maybe a deluded person who's doing this, but he seems quite like he has humor about it as well. He's like, oh, this person, you know, he makes a joke about it.
And but he's very nonchalant about everything too.
It's quite interesting. And suddenly this guy he sees is like, whoa.
Yeah, and then
I gotta follow.
So he follows him until I think it's about around 11 o'clock that he starts following this man in the evening. And then throughout the entire night, he follows this man. And the man just walks through the city, and he walks into a shop and looks at things, but never asks for a price, never talks to anyone. He just keeps walking. But he's always within the crowds.
Yeah.
He's always around.
He's always navigating the London crowd at night, which is...
Yeah, it gives an interesting perspective on what London was
like. Oh, yeah, it really does.
Back in these days. I'm not quite sure when this story was written.
I'm guessing quite a while back.
Let me see if I can quickly find this.
At the beginning. I'm guessing in the 1800s.
Yeah, in the 18... Yeah. Early to mid 1800s we're talking here.
Yeah, so this is a completely different scenery than we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, because it's London, and second, because it's such a long time ago. But you could still imagine this happening in modern times.
Certainly.
There's no outlandish themes.
Exactly. And there's no like specific things to the time necessarily.
Yeah, for sure. Apart from like the oil lamps, I think, that was explained in the beginning. Yeah, but that could easily be replaced with like normal street lights.
Yeah, so it's interesting how he's able to... We know we're in London, but we don't necessarily... Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't thought about that before, but he's able to make us feel like we're in London, but doesn't tell us anything really about London.
Yeah, the only thing we really know is the crowds. I guess the people might change as well, because he talks about the Jewish rich members. Mm-hmm. He talks about the gamblers and then stuff like that. And maybe right now in England it's quite different at this time. Maybe the groups have shifted.
Yeah, and even like, I don't think it's possible to identify people in that way anymore.
Not only
because there's so many more people, but also because...
Maybe, because people...
You don't know what... You don't really know anything about anyone.
I guess, and even with, like, the uniformization of, like, clothes and... Like, a lot of people wear very similar clothes nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the social class is a lot harder to see. I think that could also affect it. But I think you can always make assumptions about people based on their physical appearance. Like, looking down on the street, you can already say, like, hey, this guy, you know, he seems like a gambler or something like that.
I don't want to agree with you.
Oh, I get you want to believe times have changed.
Well, I just don't want to believe that upon physical appearance we can make judgments about people around us.
I guess so, but I feel like that's even if you don't like that idea, I feel like everybody does it subconsciously.
Of course, yeah. And you know, when I look at someone, there are things that come to mind.
Oh yeah, me too. Like immediately you have a thought.
You classify them.
Yeah.
In that sense, it's really quite interesting that he would write this account of that.
I guess maybe he's even mocking the tendency of people that people have of doing that.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the point of doing that? You don't know anything about
these
people.
That's probably also where the whole casual nature of him comes from.
Yeah, and I guess maybe the man that he follows is kind of like, it's the odd one out, you know? It's like,
mm-hmm.
You can't always classify someone, and when you won't be able to, you'll feel annoyed about it, and you'll want to know more.
Exactly. It was now nearly daybreak, but a number of wretched inebriates still pressed in and out of the flaunting entrance. With a half-shriek of joy, the old man forced a passage within, resumed at once his original bearing, and stalked backward and forward, without apparent object, among the throng. He had not been thus long occupied, however, before a rush to the doors gave token that the host was closing them for the night. It was something even more intense than despair that I then observed upon the countenance of the similar being whom I had watched so pertinaciously. Yet he did not hesitate in his career, but with a mad energy retracted his steps at once to the heart of the mighty London. Long and swiftly he fled, while I followed him in the wildest amazement, resolute not to abandon a scrutiny in which I now felt an interest all-absorbing.
Good job with the hard words there, first of all.
Thank you very much.
This old man, another main character to the story.
Yeah, but this is really
in
where...
In a different way.
Because nothing interesting has happened. This man hasn't done anything interesting, but
yeah,
I think
but
it's...
something about him draws him.
But also, he's been following him all night.
Yeah,
know?
I guess so.
What is he going to do, stop now?
Yeah, at this point, it's he says he can't give up on this interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess...
It's all absorbing.
Yeah, once you focus on something, even very small, you want to know
mm-hmm.
what the reason behind that is.
And this man in the story, it says that he'd just been sick, and he'd gone out of sickness, and he was... finally able to enjoy his cigar
outside.
And his newspaper.
That's a key element as well.
Yeah.
Because he maybe this is why he's so focused on everyone, is that he hasn't been in contact with anyone for a long time. And now that he's exposed to it, he's suddenly like, wow, I remember this.
That kind of premise of people who have been taken out of a society for a certain reason it seems to be such a like popular trope for authors to pick as a beginning of their book, you know?
Oh, maybe. That's an interesting point. Maybe he started that, in a way, with this short story.
Perhaps.
It creates an intense reaction, and so the reader is immediately interested.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe just what I'm describing is like stories arise from placing people in situations they're not
in intense with. Situations, for sure.
Like the first few episodes of this podcast, the woman in the dunes.
Oh,
know,
that
a man,
is
a man
that's
was placed
another
in unfamiliar.
A good parallel that we found that you found there.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
But I don't know how profound that is. You know,
it's just that an interesting story trope is to put average people in intense situations and describe their reaction.
And that's where relatability comes from.
I guess so.
It's making circumstance extraordinary. Is better than making the person extraordinary.
Well, that's an opinion as well, because for example, I'm taking a random example here,
mm-hmm.
but like superhero movies, it's a similar situation, but I, you know, personally, I really enjoy superhero movies.
Yeah, but you like, okay, let me make a little assumption here. I assume that you like it because of the the themes of sex and power and the visual effects.
I guess so.
And the epicness of it all.
Oh, yeah, the epicness is definitely
isn't part that of it. Where it comes from?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I guess an intense situation is always what the goal is.
Yeah.
Whether it be in a daily life, like this man who's seeing these crowds and he finds that very intense, or a superhero movie where a man is like a superhero is fighting a monster.
I also think it's important with this story to kind of observe that really he isn't extraordinary, nor is the situation.
Yeah.
He's trying to make it that.
Well, I feel like the character, the narrator really believes that. Like when he sees that man, he's like, this is a crazy situation.
Yeah.
And he decides to follow him, and it's a whole adventure. And I guess as long as one person finds it intense or impressive, then it's communicated.
Indeed.
Very interesting.
I grew wearied unto death, and stopping fully in front of the wanderer, gazed at him steadfastly in the face. He noticed me not, but resumed his solemn walk, while I, ceasing to follow, remained absorbed in contemplation. This old man, I said at length, is the type and the genius of deep crime. He refuses to be alone. He is the man of the crowd. It will be in vain to follow, for I shall learn no more of him, nor of his deeds. The worst heart of the world is a grosser book than the Hortulus Animae, and perhaps it is but one of the great mercies of God that es lasst sich nicht lesen. There you go.
Good job.
This is where we come full circle with the story.
It really adds on a lot when he says he is the crowd.
Yeah.
This is why he's so drawn to him in the end. It's he represents the group so well. The crowd. He follows the crowd in a way that he is the crowd.
Yeah,
but he impersonates it.
But the crowd, by definition, is not personal.
Is a group of individuals.
Exactly.
But
nothing specific.
I guess they're all the same once you see them from the outside.
Yeah.
And I guess it all comes back to the original quote, you know.
Exactly.
There is misfortune in knowing that you can't be alone or something like that. What is it?
Yeah, let me just find that original quote. We don't mess around here on the Book Boys podcast.
We give you only straight facts.
Only facts. It does not permit itself to be read. There are some secrets.
It's in French.
Oh, is that what
you
meant?
Let me translate. Yeah. This great misfortune to not be able to be alone. So he's saying it's a great misfortune to not be alone.
And he calls the man a man of crime.
Exactly.
A criminal. Yeah.
So a man of I guess it's a great misfortune to not be part of the crowd. And now that he's been put back in it, he's having an intense experience by seeing this old man.
No, but he says
also
it's
part of the crime.
It's a great misfortune to not be alone.
Yeah.
This man is part of the crowd. He is the crowd. He is a criminal. That's the life he's living.
Yeah, and it's a
but
great
you
misfortune.
You can't get out of it. Yeah, it's a misfortunate one.
So it all comes back full circle in the end
with
the short story.
And this is almost like kind of a day in the life of a man that he describes in the beginning of the story.
I guess so.
Of someone like that who has undivulgable secrets and that will go with him to his grave.
That's a good breakthrough that we got there.
I don't know if it's so much of a breakthrough, but it's, you know,
it's a different perspective.
We've certainly grasped the story, I feel.
I think so too. Or we're grasping at straws, at least.
yes. A fine line between
those
two.
Yes. I did have a fun fact about Edgar Allan Poe, if you want to hear it.
I would love to hear it.
Because, crazy story, when he was very young, when he was like one or two, his father left.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few years later, his mother died.
Okay.
And so he was orphaned, and he was well, not adopted, but he was allowed to come into another family, the Allens.
Okay.
And so that's where his name comes, Edgar Allan Poe. So he took the, even though he's not officially adopted, he took the Allen name to thank them.
But Poe is his actual last name.
Poe is his actual name, so he's Edgar Allan Poe.
But his real name is Edgar Poe.
Yeah.
Well, we
and Edgar apparently was to be named after a character in Shakespeare in his play King Lear.
Oh, wow, really?
So maybe, it's not sure, but.
Oh, okay. See.
According to my sources, it could be.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you should do this type of research thing more.
Hey, I enjoy doing it. It's sometimes I just forget, but when we do a new author, I'll do it.
Did you research this the quote at the beginning?
Yeah, not the quote. I just translated myself.
Hmm.
But I did research the author of the quote. So.
Yeah, no, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. That's how I knew that.
A thoroughly enjoyable read.
Yeah, it's
really,
Edgar Allan
really
Poe
liked it.
Quite. If a young reader, you know, is listening to this, I would suggest giving it a look. you know, it's going to be difficult because it's of course it's old English and
it's not so old English though.
Yeah, but it doesn't draw the it's not like some
it's not modern English.
Exactly. Sure. So of course it's going to be slightly harder, you know, you might lose focus, but you know, power through it and you'll get an immense exactly. You'll get an immense reward.
And you know, don't be afraid to reread a page or reread a passage.
Oh yeah, just take your time, you know. Yeah. I realized that I was reading some books. I don't remember what it was, but I was reading a book and I was looking at the page number. I was like, oh, I'll read to page 10 or something like that. And then I realized, I'll just read when I, till the point I want.
Exactly.
I don't really care. And then I'll stop.
And which then, I think so is... what page did you read? More than 10?
I read to page 50.
Oh, it was the that's Paul what Auster I love book. To hear.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I woke up early in the morning as well, earlier before class. And I read...
before class. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So,
That's all I had to say about the story.
Me too. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I recommend. This whole collection seems very interesting. So we always have a source, if we don't have any ideas for a podcast, of a short story to analyze.
Yeah. We now have several bundles.
Yeah, Bukowski.
We still have the Murakami,
Scheherazade for sure.
And now this one too.
But next week we're thinking of doing Paul Auster.
We're not thinking about it. It will be done.
We'll try our best.
Yes.
And also we need to write our short stories at some point.
Yeah.
We can take our time for that. We had that. Maybe a little teaser for a future one. I don't know if you guys have heard, but A Quiet Place 2
is
coming out in the cinemas. Max just hit his head on the lamp. Brilliant Book Boys podcast situation. But yeah, Quiet Place. If you guys, you know, have heard of it or not, maybe watch Quiet Place 1. It's a horror movie, of course, but it's quite...
It's an elegantly well-done horror movie.
Me, who doesn't... I personally don't really enjoy horror movies. I wouldn't watch it alone. But Quiet Place really struck a chord with me. It's a very original concept and a very interesting one at that.
Mm-hmm.
And since 2 is coming out, the second edition...
What is our concept for this podcast here? What are we going to do?
I'd say we watch both.
Yeah.
And then maybe we compare... We say aspects that we liked, we didn't liked. Maybe we talk about some cinematography. A specific scene, maybe, that we enjoyed.
Mm.
Find it on YouTube or something like that. That could be a really interesting... but you guys, you know, you guys are the judges, so leave a little comment down below if you...
We're still waiting for that feedback.
Yeah, so I guess...
Book Boys Tip of the Week.
Oh!
Almost
Thank you very much. Because I've been thinking about this for a while, since I had mine 2 weeks ago, when you had yours. So I actually have two, but I'll cheat this week. But so my original one was this Netflix TV show that I discovered called Formula One: Drive to Survive. I'll give you a little premise. Basically, when I was younger, when I was a young lad, my dad would like often play Formula One on TV, and I would like check it out, and I'd be like, "Ooh, I like this pilot," you know.
Yeah.
But I never really delved into it. And at one point, I kind of stopped because my dad stopped because it kind of got boring. There was a change of rules and stuff like that. Anyways, I come across this TV show, and I looked at the trailer. The trailer looked great. I was like, this looks great. So I click on episode one, and immediately, you know, I'm involved in it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, wow, Formula One, great. They go in-depth behind the scenes. They interview...
It's documentary style, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But it's very, like, they include... a car breaks down and then the I guess the director from who's ordering around the pilots, he has a breakdown and he starts swearing and stuff like that. That's all included. And it's really you really understand the stakes behind each race. It's very interesting. There are different nationalities as well, of course, so there's like they do Max Verstappen and they do a bunch of young French pilots, which I really like. And season 2 just came out, so I'm gonna be watching that soon.
Wow.
I need to finish season 1 first, but you know, definitely recommend. And my second recommendation was actually last weekend. I went to go see Les Misérables with my parents, which is Les Misérables is a Victor Hugo novel, which is like one of the most classic books ever.
Okay.
Yeah, we should. I mean, it's very big, but we could read it at some point.
It's a big boy.
It's a classic, but anyway, this was like a really loosely adapted version to our modern times about the surroundings of Paris and how tough the times are right now there. And it won the equivalent for the Oscars for French, which is Les Césars,
the Cannes,
the Festival de Cannes. And so it's a brilliant movie.
Movie. If you've watched the Mr. Bean Goes on Holiday, you'll be very familiar with the Cannes Festival.
Oh yeah, the Cannes Festival. I thought you were going to say with this movie, and I was going to say nothing to do with each other. But Festival de Cannes is for sure an iconic festival. So, you know, Don't take my word for it. Take a bunch of reviewers.
But that's we are reviewers, though.
I guess so. Now we are. Yeah. We have become official.
Now that we've
launched. I created an IMDb account. That's right.
Really?
Yeah. You can add movies to your watch list. It's very nice.
Like Goodreads?
Yeah, exactly.
I see.
Goodreads is also, it's like the IMDb of books.
Well, this has been episode 1 of season 2.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this faster-paced format.
Yeah, I like it. I think
me too. I think it's definitely worth experimenting with. And we'll see you next week with some Paul Auster.
From now on, uploads every Monday.
Weekly. We'll do our best.
See you later.
See you next week.